Welcome to Complementary, a series covering the principles and practices of interface design hosted by Katie Langerman and Anthony Hobday. Today we're discussing coherent interface design. Yesterday, one of my coworkers asked if I could edit their podcast in a trade for some dev work. And so now I'm just like putting this out into the world. I will edit your podcast if you build me back-end code. Because I don't like
that. You're editing this one. I've got so much back-end code that needs to be written.
Can you trade some dev work for me?
Did they ask that because they've heard our extremely popular?
Yeah. They listened to ours and thought, wow, this audio quality is amazing. The editing is just impeccable. I wonder who does this.
I shouldn't ask this while the recording is happening, by the way, but I keep wondering, is your partner on Twitter, first of all?
Yep.
And is there any chance that your partner, well, sometimes I see people pop up, not just people that follow me, but I see you interact with people and I think, is that Katie's partner? Is that Katie's partner? I'm sort of like looking at each person and guessing. And it doesn't happen often. It's like in the past when you've liked something or you've retweeted something.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, maybe that fits. Because I think at one point you told me what they did, but it's all vague in my head.
Yeah.
So I'm always sort of curious.
Here's the thing. I don't interact with my partner at all on Twitter. So I do follow him. He does not follow me, but he's very particular about who he follows. I don't make the cut, but no.
I am too, actually.
I know.
You're one of, I think, 18 people that I follow. So you
Yeah, I was like, wow, I'm so honored. How did I make this cut? I guess you kind of have to. It would be a little bit weird if you didn't. But
also, I need to find out when the podcast gets published.
That's how you find out.
you're the update source. I'm like, oh, okay, great. She published it.
Great. Glad that's my duty.
It is ironic that the last 8 minutes, I think, some people would find that far more interesting
than our topic.
No, I mean, I think the topic's interesting, but it's so much more structured, you know, even though we talk about it quite casually. It's like such a, here's the focus. Whereas I think the idea of two designers talking about the design industry, quite honestly, they're probably maybe a different set of people, but there are people I think who would find that quite interesting, which is a lot of what those like comedian podcasts do, you know, like, not Joe Rogan, bad example, Tom Segura and Bert, whatever. I don't know. I watch YouTube shorts all the time, so I see these comedy podcasts because they all post videos. That's their promotion strategy. And so you get these two people who just like shoot the breeze for an hour.
Yeah.
And people love it.
They do. I love it. There's a lot of design podcasts like that already. I need to do a roundup of all my favorite design podcasts because there's so many right now. There's a lot of new ones. And it's just like listening to your friends chat about work and stuff. And it's very soothing, cathartic. But maybe we can have a little bit of both.
How honest are they?
Ooh, that's
about
a good
the industry
question.
You know, or their jobs.
I think everyone is gonna you have your limitations of how much you're gonna say that's related to your own company. Unless you're an independent, you can say whatever you want. So
yeah,
that's something to analyze in my roundup, is like what kind of angle they're taking. But they're all small enough that you could really say whatever you want, no one would know, because they probably don't have a ton of listeners. Which is
in 2 years' time,
fun.
We've got thousands of listeners. You go back to the first episode, you're like, wow, we should fire these people immediately.
But yeah, maybe we'll incorporate a little bit of both. I think it's valuable anyways to hear a little bit of banter. But we do have a real topic today. We're going to talk about what makes interface design coherent. And you brought up this topic, and I really liked that word. I was just excited by the word coherent. I just felt like it stood out and like gave me a different lens and angle to kind of think about interface design through in my notes. Where did that kind of come from? Did anything spark you to think about that term and how you apply it to interface design?
Coherence is, I think, a thing that designers naturally look for when they sort of judge an interface. I don't think they often have a word to put to it. I think every designer, at least a couple of years into their career, probably knows the word coherence. But they might not use it to describe this sense of everything here is right. You know, it works together. I will say that I used to bounce back and forth between coherent and cohesive. But then I looked up, especially for this episode, I looked up the dictionary definitions of both coherent and cohesive. And I thought coherent sounds like it fits a bit better. Because okay. I sort of use it as a technical term, even though it's a standard word. So you can just, you know, use whichever standard word is closest. But you want it to be specific enough. So yeah, I generally think of it as this is what someone's looking at if they're judging a landing page. I think part of what they're thinking in their internal monologue, even if they're not aware of it, is this design coherent? So
yeah.
Partly because that's such a general, sort of vague topic. This is the sort of thing I really enjoy digging into and trying to actually systematically explore and put a definition to in design terms.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Do you use this word much in your career, let's say?
I don't think so. I think I use, like, so when I was thinking about it more, the top word that came up for me was consistency, which I think like is part of a coherent interface, and like a lot of things that lead to consistent design also lead to a coherent design. So you hear that word a lot more, especially in design systems, of consistency and like making sure things visually align, fit the pattern, overall pattern design, fit the brand. So that's sort of where it comes up for me. I think like it also comes up more outside of design systems, like around content design and actual, like we think about all the little bits and pieces that build up the UI, but then the actual product or the actual UI that has the data, real content, real behavior and interaction, like it's probably more common to think about the coherence at that point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And consistency is an interesting one because, people often talk about, no, they don't often. They rarely, which is part of the problem. But consistency can be talked about in terms of internal consistency and external consistency. So is it consistent with itself? Is like internal. And is it consistent with other things? Is external. And so in our case, it might be, you know, is this interface consistent with other interfaces so that someone will know roughly how to use it because the menu button is in the top left or whatever it happens to be. And so, yeah, internal consistency feels closest to the idea of coherence. But I quite like to think about coherence as more of a meta term that describes your experience or your impression potentially as a non-designer. And so it feels more fluffy in a useful way. I don't know if that makes sense, but I can imagine that you might make two components consistently. Like you might round the corners consistently across all of your components, but then actually those rounded corners are not consistent with other things in the app. Like the feeling of them, you know? And so you get this like fluffiness of, does it feel like these rounded corners belong with this illustration, even though we're using them consistently throughout the app?
Right.
And so, yeah, consistency feels like it's colder or more mechanical almost, and coherency feels like, how does this make me feel?
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good way to think about it. I think design systems designers are probably on the colder side, which sounds mean. I don't mean it in a bad way, but we're not so fluffy. We're a little more technical and thinking about implementation.
I think you have to be.
Yeah, we do that so that other people can be fluffy. I want you to have your fluffy moment.
I mean, you're typing numbers into boxes all day. It has to be a bit colder, you know? You're not to... Let's just print these out, get them up on the walls and just vibe, you know, in the room and see what happens, you know? Yeah, it's really, really coherent.
Yeah. I like that you mentioned consistency with external patterns too, because that was something I thought about as far as like things being predictable. I don't know if that word came up for you, but like creating patterns that already exist in the web, if we're talking about like a web platform, not just reinventing things, but repeating patterns that people are already familiar with and then putting your paint on top of it or whatever to make it fit the system or the brand that you're working in. I think that can also aid in a coherent design just because it's easier, like it provides more clarity and it's easier to navigate.
Yeah, that is interesting because I think I tend to think of coherency as mostly internal consistency. So it's like, do all these things in this set that I've created feel like they belong together? And I guess I'd normally think of external stuff, maybe in terms of these are sort of the cultural associations or personal associations that I bring to the interface when I use it. And so those are maybe what help me feel like this is all coherent. And so maybe one example, I don't know if it's a good example, but maybe one example is if in different cultures, different colors mean different things. Does this shape belong with this color in my culture? And maybe actually in a different culture, that shape would belong with a different color, because maybe you associate the color with softness or friendliness. And actually in a different culture, you associate that color with danger or money or something, you know, depending on what color your money are. So yeah, I guess when I wrote the word coherent a while ago, I was thinking mostly of internal stuff. And yeah, whereas consistency, it does feel like it expands much further in my mind to, hey, is this consistent with the rest of the web? So that it's easy to use, like you're saying.
Yeah. So that's like a different layer almost before, maybe it comes before coherent.
So there's like a Venn diagram maybe, and it's not complete overlap. But
yeah,
I guess what I'm saying is coherent feels like it is to do more with your current experience. Does my current experience feel coherent? Whereas consistency is almost like a property of the thing, like whether or not you're experiencing it. And I don't know if that makes sense, because we change things in interfaces to make them feel more coherent. So that's definitely a property of the thing.
I think what you're like, what you just said makes me think you could have on a single product, on a single website that has a consistent design or like consistent design system, you could encounter a page within that site that is not coherent.
Yeah, it's a good point. If you take, you could take some components and mix them with other components, and you've made bad choices, right?
Yeah.
Like if you've got more than one field style and you choose a specific type for a specific page, maybe it's not coherent with the rest of that page. Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't, just because you have consistency in your design system, maybe doesn't necessarily mean you have a coherent interface. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that makes sense to me. I'm coming up with a lot of this stuff off the top of my head because, like we said, this is quite hard to define.
Yeah,
it's quite a fluffy word. So that sounds good to me. But if you disagree, let us know.
I think it's an important distinction to make, because sometimes designers make the assumption that the design system makes everything perfect, and that you can do whatever you want with the bits and pieces, but you still have to think about, I mean, there's so much more to think about than that. So, and it might not be the fault of the design system too. It might just be the way things were combined or other content design issues or behavioral issues that created an incoherent design in that case.
I think another good example is if you use like, if you have four heading styles of different sizes, if you use heading two everywhere in your interface, including in cases where it should be a smaller heading because you've got this, you know, hierarchy going on, that's consistent, undoubtedly. You're consistently using heading twos. And like even those heading twos are consistent with the other heading styles, right? They are, they sort of belong together. They use the same typeface or whatever, but it doesn't feel like a coherent interface because you've only got one heading size all over the place.
Right.
And
you've lost your hierarchy.
Yeah. We both wrote down a lot of things that we think relate to coherence. I think writing these down, I realized that it's pretty much almost everything in an interface has some say in it. I've written before about the metaphor of like people in a choir, for example, and everyone in the room is saying something different, then it's really, I think they call it discordant, where it's all like jumble of noises. But if everyone's singing the same thing, then it sounds better. You can actually make out the words. But then there's like a level above that, which is if everyone has learned how to sing properly and they're singing with like the right tone or timbre or whatever it's called, they're the right pitches, they're separated into groups so you can maybe hear the distinction a bit better, just like you have surround sound. Then that's even more coherent, right? You can hear what they're saying already, but if you get these professional choir singers, it's that one level higher of it sounds much more clear, and it's sort of uplifting in a way. It's like feels satisfying to listen to. I think it's the same with an interface. If you put the extra effort in to make everything feel coherent, there are levels to that, right? Where you can make it much better and much better and much better. And then finally, it just feels so clear to look at, and everything feels like it fits together. And it's just this like warm, fuzzy feeling, maybe mainly as a designer, but I think also more subtly, perhaps, I think other people experience it where they look at something and think, yeah, I've found my forever home.
It's pleasing. They might not know why.
On this landing page.
But they feel attracted to it in some way. That sounds lovely. I think realistically, I wonder if it's possible to create. Oh, we know it's possible. We know anything is possible. But I think it is challenging to create a coherent interface for a large product with lots of different teams working on one thing while they're all sort of injecting their own little things into it, like new features and stuff. So, and we've talked about this many times before. It just comes up a lot, but I don't know what the solution is to achieve that coherent, wonderful, peaceful design, unless it's just basically you and a couple other people working on it and it's not a massive product.
Yeah, get a smaller product.
Yeah,
I'm definitely in the it's not possible to make anything coherent, not just interfaces, anything coherent once you've got past X number of people, because it's like a too many cooks spoil the broth situation. And that's, you know, I think we've already said before, but that's fine. You know, products don't need to be, or interfaces don't need to be, the most coherent they can be to be useful, which is a good thing for people who are trying to make money from half the planet.
Yeah.
Especially with, you know, localization and everything, which we rarely talk about, but that must change things quite a lot, because if something feels coherent with one piece of copy, putting in, you know, German is the classic example, putting in much longer German words might throw everything out in terms of the layout and how visually heavy things are.
Yeah. There was some talk of that at Figma's Config conference in some of the talks, which I was kind of happy to hear about from both the, like, this is a tangent, but from both the design angle and the engineering angle, because there was a whole talk about CSS, which I was very pleased to see. And there's a lot the web is giving us now to better support different languages natively in the browser. But I think also Figma maybe introduced some text balancing features or something. Which is also a thing that exists in the web now. So
I saw that the CSS isn't the CSS. I saw that CSS is adding a property. I only saw a tweet about this, so I might get this wrong. But they're adding a property that means that you can basically pin one element to another element in terms of position on the page.
Anchored positioning.
Yeah, but it's like you give it a different ID to, like, I don't know if that's the same thing you're describing. But you're saying, like, this drop-down menu, pin it to this drop-down button.
Yeah.
And that was one CSS thing that really actually excited me, because I remember an exact situation at a previous job where I said, oh, for this table row, we want to be able to click the row and have a little drop-down appear, and so that you can give more information in that, you know, that table cell. And the front-end developer, who was a very good front-end developer, said, no, I'm not going to do it, because you definitely need JavaScript, and it's really annoying to make it feel smooth and have it anchored to the cell if someone scrolls up and down the page. So I was like, okay, I can see that. We'll change it so that design, you know, does this instead. And now I've seen that they're adding that to sort of native CSS. That's if only we had that in that situation. It'll probably never come up again in my career, but it's good to know, oh, no, we can have something anchored, and it won't be computationally expensive or annoying to write JavaScript for.
Yeah, that's a huge one. That's, I think you're talking about the anchored positioning stuff, and there's like probably new popover API, all kinds of cool, fun, exciting things. That was like one of the main points of the CSS talk at Config, was like, tell your developer this is possible. They can't say no. Tell them it's real. I like that. We're closing the gap a little bit there. But
there's always this moment I have with developers, and I'm sure other designers as well, where I don't write any code and I'd rather not have to write any code. But I know enough code to make me dangerous, I think, as a designer, because I can go to the developer and say, no, I'm pretty sure this is possible. Yeah. How about you try this? And it might be because they just don't want to bother. You know, it's annoying to rewrite. Maybe they've already written it in one way and it would be a refactor. But I really enjoy being able to go to a developer and say, you should try this because I think it is possible. So having that technical knowledge is useful. But I don't like it when I think something is possible and then I have to go and research it because they're like, I'm not sure. And I think they're being silly. And it turns out it's like completely impossible, never been done before, never will be done in the future. And I had an example recently, but I cannot remember what it was. Oh, it was an overlay on the background color. I was like, oh no, when you hover over an item, we've got a background color now. Don't change the background color, just add a 10% opacity black overlay. So we darken the color of every element on the page when it gets hovered over. That would be much simpler than having to define all these separate hover state colors. I went and looked that up, and you can't have, I think it was that there's basically no CSS like background overlay, like
to layer colors.
Yeah, to add a second background fill.
There's a hack for that. You've unleashed a can of worms in this. Because I think anything is possible with CSS, but there's a ridiculous hack for that. And it's that you can use background image with a gradient. And then your gradient, you define your background color and you define your overlay color with an opacacity. And it will work. I'll send you an example because I actually like have a code pen with this because one of my coworkers and I wanted to do this. I wouldn't recommend it. It's not a very maintainable like way of doing this, but anything's possible.
Yeah, the thing is, I really hate hacks. So I want to do the sort of officially supported method or nothing at all. I'll change my design before I agree that a developer should do any sort of workarounds. But
it's cool.
That's one of those things that felt really simple because it feels very simple to do it in something like Figma. You know, just put two layers there or something.
That's the problem.
And then it can't be done in CSS. So if they could add native support for that, it'd be great. Which sort of brings us back to this coherency thing.
Yeah, let's bring it back.
If you make every background color 10% darker with a flat black 10% overlay, that is one sort of simple way of making every hover state feel consistent.
Yeah.
Because you're making them sort of consistently darker, at least in terms of numbers. I don't want to get into perception of brightness. Like maybe a 10% darker yellow is a different perceptual brightness than a 10% darker blue.
But, yeah, it does kind of depend. I do like setting a standard. Goldman Sachs, their design system has like one of the best interaction design color docs I've ever seen. And they have cool rules. I think it's like 20% hover, 40% active. And that's how you create your different states. And it's like you use that same formula across the board and it just works with their color system. Really like that. So,
yeah. I'm sure someone there is quite proud of themselves.
They should be. They're not very public about, I can never find anybody from that team to be like, hello, this is one of my favorites. Good job. Because I don't think they're on Twitter, but we still talk about them.
Do the developers actually use the brilliantly designed interaction design color system?
Hope so. They should. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm going to talk about some things now, specific things that I think help with interface design coherency. Coherence, I think.
We should have
because they're sort of like they're sort of an easy mode. I was actually talking about this on Twitter recently, but there's sort of an easy mode and a hard mode for coherence.
Okay.
And the easy mode is generally that you, for example, take all of your images and put an overlay color, as we've just been discussing. Overlay color over all of them, because if you've got a green color scheme, for example, you could overlay a sort of a green color over all of your imagery and tint it basically by putting like 20% green on it. And so that'll make everything feel coherent because everything will be a shade of green now. But it's relatively easy to do in a technical sense, but it's quite bad because you're losing information. The images now look different. Maybe you lose some detail because they've been darkened slightly. They're not as sort of colorful as they once were. They're more one-dimensional. And the hard mode is basically you've got your green color scheme and you have to go and find images that suit that green.
Mm.
And so it ties into, I think, one of the biggest things you can do to make an interface look coherent, which is this idea of visual language. And that means you take every visual element you have and you tie them together by making sure that they, this is a hard thing to describe, by making sure that the way they look feels the same.
Yep.
And usually you have to give examples to describe this concept. And so if you have a photo with lots of circles in it or round objects, then that feels more similar to your rounded buttons than if you have a photo with loads of sharp corners in it and you've got still rounded buttons. They feel sort of like they don't belong together necessarily, whereas the photo with lots of round shapes and the rounded buttons feel like they belong together more. Same with colors. Same with things like illustrations and icons. If one is line art, like the icon is line-based and the illustrations are solid shapes, then they don't belong together as well as line art illustrations and line art icons. And so there's all these little things you can look at that are really hard to actually get right, because finding that sort of content, that sort of those sorts of assets mm-hmm. is hard to make them all coherent. Which makes me think they should have some kind of pack you can buy, like, we've gone and sourced all of the coherent artwork for you. Buy it from us. It's like pre-made.
Or, yeah, like they give you all the bits and pieces and you configure things together. And I mean, we've seen a lot of like kits like that that very famous illustration kit from Pablo. Cannot remember this, like their full name, but this is years ago.
Humankind or something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Humans.
Did you see the talk at Config? Let's just talk about Config some more. From Duolingo. And they're about their animation design for doing a really bad job describing this.
I'm going through them extremely slowly.
Oh, you should definitely watch this one. It's very related to what you just explained. They're basically, it was a talk given by three people talking about brand and the app and the interactions and like, they talk specifically about illustration style. And one of the like slides I can remember is they had a list of like different shapes with colors that they would use, like broken out of the illustrations. And then they would incorporate those into each character, I think. And so like each character had a different feel, but they all had this, they shared this one set of shapes that made them feel very related. The whole talk was really, really great. And like just goes into so much detail about, I guess, how to make this coherent style. Yeah. The thing is, like, it's all bespoke and custom and like beautifully done for this one Duolingo app. And that was sort of what they were advocating for, was at the end, I think they said, we think you should hire more artists. And it's true. Like, it is kind of an art form to do this. So there's like, maybe this is kind of what you were saying about hard mode and easy mode. Hard mode is like, do all this super custom stuff for your own brand. Yeah. Easy mode is like smaller kinds of, like, you buy a pack of something pre-made and fit it into your product. I think it's probably kind of rare to see the hard mode for things like this because it's so expensive. But it really just like their designs were so incredible to see how it really did kind of pull everything together. And it was just a really fun talk. So highly recommend.
Yeah, there's a approach that's sort of halfway down the spectrum of easy to hard, which is that you hopefully find the thing that is hardest to create in your interface, which if it's a website, for example, might be your photographs, or it might be your icon pack or something if you don't have anyone that can draw icons. And you basically build everything around that. And I remember we had some blinds fitted in our house, some like roller blinds, and I was talking to the people who fit them because they've just got a new website. And they did the same thing. They took the sort of medium approach, which I found really funny. They bought the sort of van they wanted for their business. They're driving around in this like VW half-tone camper van, like one of the new ones, electric and everything. And then they rebranded their business to suit the basic, like the color scheme of the van.
Wow.
So instead of designing the website or designing a new business and then wrapping the van like vinyl, which I guess they thought was a bit too extravagant, they just bought the van in like, I think it was blue and white or something, and then rebranded their business to be blue and white because they found that easier to do than to get the van wrapped. And so they thought that the van was the hard part, right? We'll just base it around this because we've already bought it. Which does mean they now have to buy vans in the future that are the same colors, or rebrand every time they buy a new van.
That is really fascinating. Like, I wish I was there for that conversation. But I kind of like it. It's kind of a cool angle.
Yeah, and it means that you have this sort of coherent-looking business, coherent-looking branding, right? But you have done, like, taken away part of the hard part. You know, you've taken the medium difficulty route where you're taking something that you really like and basing it all around that, which is the same thing most designers have to do with typefaces, for example. You might choose a really expressive heading typeface that you absolutely love for display stuff. And then you can probably base the whole brand or the whole visual expression, like visual style, around that typeface. Because if you have to design your own typeface to suit the rest of your interface, that's absolutely mad if you want that next level of coherence. And big companies do it. I think GitHub has their own sans serif, and probably, I'm assuming, Mono as well, since it's GitHub. And Twitter designed their own. I mean, they had one sort of modified from an off-the-shelf, which might be quite common. But yeah, these huge companies can design their own typefaces, but for everyone else, if they want to feel coherent, they've got the really hard task of, I've got to choose a typeface that fits this pre-made icon pack, that fits this pre-made illustration set, and so on.
I think that's challenging to match icon sets to typography. I think that's probably, I think that probably gets overlooked a lot, but it seems important.
Mm. To your point about the Duolingo approach, which is like the shapes they use and everything, I think it's worth noting that if you choose certain visual styles, like if you have all abstract imagery, this becomes a lot easier because you can take, I'm going to use squares, triangles, circles, and squiggles, right? And then you end up with this like Memphis style 80s, like Saved by the Bell aesthetic where you've like got these random shapes dotted around. But that's much easier for any designer to put together because it's all vector shapes. You can rearrange it in Figma than if you need to have someone do illustrations or photographs or icons. So that's also an easier approach to getting a really good coherence, is to have much more abstract imagery in the first place.
What about, do you have any ideas of how you can make an interface coherent when there's user-generated images present, which I think is so common, and I've been there, very hard to work with. I used to work at Car Gurus, and that means all of the images on the site, basically, like in the main product, are images coming from car dealerships. So just imagine what that looks like. They all have text inside of them with, like, you know, very big, bold, all caps words related to that specific car or dealership. We would try to, like, get them out of the image and not allow that kind of thing, but basically impossible. So it was very hard to work around that, especially with color, like the strange colors that would show up in these images, the poor quality. Like, it definitely impacted the visual design of the product. So I'm wondering, how do you work around that if you have no control over the images?
This is what I find so funny about a lot of Dribbble style mockups, where they've really gone hard on the aesthetics, is that often they'll do, like, the famous one or the infamous one is like an app where you buy trainers, as we call them in the UK, or sneakers, as you call them in the US. And they've got these like perfectly cropped and cut out 3D models almost of these sneakers on a nice white background. It's like, okay, so you're imagining a company where someone, every sneaker model that comes in or trainer model that comes in, they're cutting it out perfectly so that it doesn't have a background. Unless the manufacturers are all sending you the same sort of style of photo, you're going to have to do it yourself just to make this look as good as you want it to, because that's the coherent approach, right? You make all of the product images look the same.
Yeah.
And so that's ridiculous, but also enjoyable as a designer who sort of, I think a lot of those people don't necessarily have full-time jobs in a company that needs to think about those things.
Yeah.
So they can
wishful
show the
thinking.
Perfect. Yeah. So one thing I found interesting is that a lot of apps that do rely on user-generated imagery, like Instagram and Facebook and Airbnb, I think it's another one, that lots of photos of houses, they all seem to tend towards big, bold, black and white interfaces. And I think that's partly because the user content is the real star of the show, and so they want to fade back. But it's always bold. Like when Apple did the Apple Music redesign, which is the same style, I think they maybe popularized it slightly, because I think they were the first ones to come out with that big, bold, black and white style, because they're showing a lot of album artwork and everything. they wanted to make the content the star of the show, and so they made it black and white, but they also use really big headings, for example. And so they're not trying to make the interface hide. They're trying to make it come forward almost and be
contrast.
Bold. You know, they're not saying, yeah, we're going to sit back. I think that's partly because to make, like you're saying, an interface feel coherent when you've got a lot of submitted content, maybe you have to make the interface as simple as possible, but also give it some really expressive elements that sort of partly compete with the generated content. So maybe those are the things you focus on more. Like you notice the big, bold, you know, black text title, and that's the same on every page. And maybe that helps you realize it's coherent, despite the fact that there's this photo of a car covered in wacky word art text.
Yes, that's interesting. I knew black and white definitely makes sense. I hadn't really thought about bold. And now I want to go look at all these sites and see exactly how they're doing that, because it does make sense. It's challenging to not want to add a bunch of features as well that compete with those. I think that was the biggest thing we struggled with, was all of this information we want to give to the user that's very useful information about buying a car, but it all competes with this image that has the price in it and like all this stuff that we're also trying to list. And so it is better if you can be a little more simple with it, but challenging.
Yeah.
I think for Airbnb, they like almost award, I might be making this up, but I feel like they award people who, what are they called? Landlords? What are they called when they rent out
hosts?
A place? Hosts, yeah. They award hosts that have really good images. Or like you can, if you have like a super host or something, the images are always like way better quality. So maybe that's something that they do in their app to like ensure more of a consistent look, is like make sure the, like we'll reward you if your images are good. I don't know if that's true. I feel like I heard this, but. Anyways, again,
it's hard to imagine it's hard to imagine it doesn't come into it at all when they're considering who to make a super host, unless it's automated, which it could be. But yeah, having someone review it and think, are these images good enough quality, is it's an easy decision to make for someone. And yeah, it does help to make the app feel like a higher quality place in general. So there's probably a real business reason for them to want to make it feel coherent, because it's a trust marketplace. You know, it's like if you don't trust the people, you're not going to buy. You're not going to rent.
Yeah.
And to be clear, I hadn't thought about that point about making it bold, but also quite plain for those apps until you brought it up, because I'd noticed they're all doing a similar style, but I hadn't thought about it in terms of coherence. Like, how do you make something coherent when there's so much visual noise in the content? So it's almost like you're needing to contrast the content in a way. You're not trying to fit with it. You're actually being coherent by fighting it in a way. You're saying, here's the user content, here's our designs, and you know they're our designs because they're the opposite of the content. They're black and white, they're not a jumbled mess, they're extremely like big and clear and bold.
I did just think of a point that contrasts that though.
Oh,
because I was reminded of another talk at Figma Config. Ashley gave a talk about Facebook and their accessible color palette. And in a lot of the work she was showing, I think they went from kind of going black and white for user generated. I forget exactly the product she was showing, but there were images, like probably user uploaded images. And instead of just doing black and white, they ended up, you know, using Logic to pull colors from those images and then create an interface around the color. So in that case, you are actually completely blending in the interface with the user-generated image, because you're matching like the most, not necessarily the most common color, but there was like a whole formula she went into about, because it couldn't be the most common color. It would often be probably black or white. But anyways, that's another angle, is like fully diving in and customizing the entire UI to match the images. But in that case, like I think it only works if there's a single image. So maybe this is more of like a mobile app kind of experience.
Yeah.
Possibility.
So what interface was that?
I don't remember. It was from Facebook. Yeah. So I don't use a lot of Facebook products, but I'm guessing it had something to do with their mobile Facebook app and maybe uploading. Maybe they let you edit images. I don't know, if you upload an image, maybe you can edit. So it had something to do, it was like a tool around images in Facebook. And so it had some elements of interface, like on top of the image, like buttons and controls and stuff. I really hope I'm not messing up describing the completely incorrect thing, but yeah.
Well, it's what Material Design did with Material U.
Very similar, yeah.
They pick colors from your background. But like you're saying, that's one image, right? That's your sort of ever-present image, is your background image.
Yeah.
And so that makes sense as a source of your... But it's quite interesting to think about the car app you're describing. If you go into each sort of product listing and it changes the colors of the interface to match the car image, that would probably feel not coherent, right? It would probably feel quite disorienting.
Yeah.
But maybe it wouldn't matter.
Oh.
Maybe it would feel coherent per screen, which is maybe all you need.
I want to watch her talk again and understand this more. Because it did, it seemed like a really elegant solution, but I don't understand the product it was for enough to like see how it fits into the bigger system. But it definitely would not have worked in this car site for sure.
But this this also makes me think about the way that desktop operating systems generally approach this, starting with, I think it was Vista, but basically desktop operating systems have moved more and more towards sort of transparency in their window panels and everything. So that, because it's hard to make every app feel coherent with the operating system, just like Material U, it seems like when you've got those that layering going on, if you make things more transparent, more of that background can come through from your desktop. And it makes every app feel like it belongs together more.
Yeah.
And we saw a big move towards this on macOS especially. I mean, years after Windows did all the glass effect stuff, but it's a bit more subtle because it's usually flat colors that are letting blurry colors through.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's the sort of desktop approach to what Material you did.
Yeah.
Because they have the layering they can fall back on. One other thing I wanted to bring up, because we talked a lot about visual style, is things like interaction, how the interactions feel and how things animate, and things like object permanence. Because these are the concepts of, if you treat your interaction design or your interface like a physical space, how would someone expect it to act? How would someone expect different elements to interact with each other? How should they move? How familiar does that feeling of them moving around feel? And so there's a lot of stuff there about coherence that's even harder to get right, I think, because you're tweaking, sort of easing curves for animations, and you're thinking about the spatial relationship between elements and where this thing slides off to and where that draw disappears to. Is it coherent with your expectations, you know? So probably too much to get into in this episode, but I wanted to call it out in case everyone thought we were just talking about visual coherence.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good thing to call out for sure. And it is like almost... you have to sometimes do things a little bit more custom for each case to make it feel coherent. It doesn't always like fit into the system, depending on what it is that you're animating.
No, yeah, that's another case where consistency is quite different, because if you made every sheet animate out in the same way, but some of them are smaller than others, you might actually expect them to animate differently because you expect them to have a certain weight to them based on their physical appearance or their size.
Mm.
So yeah, maybe consistency actually hurts coherence in some cases if you're approaching it that way, sort of systematically.
Yep. Should we kind of wrap up on this last question that you have here? I'm interested in this question. Is it generally easier to recognize these things than to do them?
Oh, I was talking about the start where people look through a design and they get a sense of, oh, this is off.
Yeah.
But I sort of wondered if there was a graduation there of, first of all, you get a sense that it's off because you look at a lot of design. Second of all, you graduate a bit more and you understand what's off, and maybe that it's not coherent. But then the third level is that you start to recognize the individual elements that are incoherent. And that feels like not something every designer can do. You have to maybe put some time into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was curious about that because you spend a lot of the day looking, I'm assuming, at components and trying to judge whether they're right, or like designs people put together with your components, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And trying to judge whether they're right.
Yeah. And do I think it's easier to recognize these things than to fix them? I don't know. I think this is just making me think of this tweet I saw recently. This might have been in one of your tweets, like one of your Threads. I think it was in a reply to something you said. Somebody tweeted that they can tell when a designer, oh, this was a designer shouldn't code tweet, by the way, or this is the DHH. Is that what we call that person?
Oh yeah. From Basecamp.
Yes. From Basecamp. Who was talking about how their designers don't use Figma or something, but the tweet said that they can tell by looking at it when a designer engineered a website, and they can tell when an engineer designed a website. And I was like, how? what do you mean? You can look at it and be like, yep, this was a designer who engineered this website. I can just tell. I think what they're talking about is more what we're talking about, is that they're noticing something isn't quite lining up or it doesn't feel coherent. But they don't really know why. So instead of like digging into figuring out why, it becomes more of like an implementation or a designer blame game kind of thing. Like, oh, well, this person just didn't know what they were doing, and that's why it doesn't feel coherent. But I think there's, as we've just discussed the past hour, there's a lot more that goes into it to make it actually feel coherent.
Yeah. On that point, I do think maybe there's this diminishing, not diminishing returns, but the effort you have to put in is much higher towards the end of like the coherence spectrum, but the returns are much less noticeable. So it's not necessarily diminishing returns. I think it all does help, but you might spend an hour tweaking spacing, you know, or layouts or whatever, and it all feels more coherent, but it's much harder to point out the difference you made, like a pixel here, a pixel there. And those things are much easier to miss for anyone who didn't do it themselves. That might be the engineer, but it might be your fellow designer, you know, sitting next to you. Maybe they're just as good, but they don't see the hour of tweaking spacing that went into it. They just see 16 pixels or the 32 pixels, whatever. And so they're not even looking for those small details necessarily.
Yeah.
But maybe they do look at it and think, oh, this is good, or oh, no, this is slightly off.
Yes. I had an interesting case of this at work yesterday that I will briefly describe, but it was an input field next to a button in line, like in a row. And they were using a small sized button with a regular size input. So they were not the same height. And there were no designers involved. These were all engineers trying to figure out what is wrong with this picture. Like, this feels off. But instead of thinking about the fact that they are using two different size variants in one layout, they sort of thought, oh, this must be a problem with this component input. It's the wrong size next to this button. And so the solution was obviously very hacky. Like, well, we'll just kind of like go override this thing and make the button fit this, or maybe the opposite way. Like, we'll make the input smaller. There was a conversation of like, should we make the button bigger or the input smaller? It was kind of a whole thing. So then coming in with that lens, obviously I know something is wrong visually looking at it. They aren't aligned. But maybe I just have more system knowledge to know, like, oh, well, you're just using the wrong size button next to the input. So if we make that the regular size, then they will align.
Yeah, you could film that and put it in the cinema as a horror movie, as long as the audience was only designers. It's like a fly on the wall during a conversation about there's something wrong with this, but I'm not sure. Well, let's just tweak this. And they're like, no.
Yeah, it gets layers of hacks on it. And in the end, the input was still slightly off, and I stared at it being off by 2 pixels for 1 hour and decided I couldn't fix it. But these are the things. It is true. Like, sometimes you are just literally staring at pixels being slightly off for a long time, but it impacts the whole feel of the interface when it's there. It's very jarring. Maybe it's not jarring for everybody, but to me, it's like really obvious, and it messes with the coherence of the design. So,
yeah. One thing I realized while talking about all this is that maybe there's this sort of vague bit at the end of the interface design process where we tweak things. Like, we often describe it as tweaking or sort of iterating, whatever. And it's usually we're nudging things around or flipping things horizontally in Figma or whatever, and we're trying to see how we can make it feel or look better. And I wonder if 90% of the time what we're doing when we're doing that phase is actually making the design more coherent. Maybe that's the goal we're aiming for, but people don't really talk about it in those terms. And I think I need to go through another round of that sort of behavior where I'm nudging things around and actually stop and think about every choice I'm making and try and figure out whether each one is in service of coherence or something else. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I hadn't really thought about this before, but now I'm thinking that sort of coherence making is maybe a good way to describe the, well, not a good way, bad English, but it's a good way to think about what that final stage is where you're like, oh, it's not quite right. Let me tweak it a bit.
Yeah.
Actually, you're making it more coherent.
It sounds better than just, oh, I'm making it look pretty or making it look better. If a non-designer is kind of asking you about your process, and often we get labeled for just like making things look pretty. So maybe using the word coherent is a little bit more specific and easier to communicate with non-designers of like what it is why you're nudging literally pixels around on your artboard.
For an hour.
Yeah.
Up and down, up and down.
Yep. Yeah.
Go to lunch, come back with it with fresh eyes.
Hate it. Start over. Cool. All right. I think that's it for coherence. I mean, we probably could go into much more detail about some of these little things, but we can always do an episode 2.
Yeah, there's a lot more written down in this list than we talked about, mm-hmm. but that'll have to be a fun teaser.
Yeah.
For the listeners.
Future. I think we both learned some things in this conversation, so I'm kind of interested to take some of these things we discussed back to my work and see if I'm noticing it more, like impacting the work that I do. Or at least how I communicate the work that I'm doing. So maybe we'll have a follow-up episode.
Yeah. I don't think we should. I think we should charge for premium access to the notes that we didn't speak about in each episode.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's a lot more here, listeners. Just pay us for complimentary blue and you can get access to our notes.
Or like a private call. You can come on and ask us your questions and we'll answer them for you. Private meetup.
We'll give you
the Riverside link.
You know.
Just pop in. Cool. Okay. Thanks everybody for listening this week.
Yeah.
And we'll catch you in the next one.
Bye.
Where's the record? Oh.